Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. The end of the year is near, and that means everyone's comparing their Spotify Wrapped and Apple Music replays, making the case for why their most listened to song is the best. We want to do something similar for Insights Now. That's why, for our final episode of Season 12, we'll reflect on some of the most important takeaways from the 23 episodes we recorded this year. From exploring the fastest growing themes in alternatives to navigating the complexities of the US election, we've covered a lot of ground. So stay tuned as we recap our greatest hits of 2024. In this episode, we'll be exploring the main themes and insights from the past year. I'm thrilled to be joined by Gabriela Santos, Chief Strategist for the Americas at JP Morgan Asset Management, and my new co-host for the Insights Now podcast. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. Now let's get started. Gabby, welcome back to Insights Now.
Super. Thank you, David. It's great to be here. And since I have the mic, I think maybe we could start with you. As you look back this year, season 9, that was our first full season of the year, and we really talked all about alternatives. Mm-hmm. And if you had one particular conversation with one of these portfolio managers that stood out to you, what was it? What's the growing asset class that's really exciting?
Well, first of all, I thought it was really interesting this year for various reasons, both because of the importance and the growing importance of alternatives as an investing option, but also because of various things that we were doing to try and ramp up our efforts on alternatives here. I was very involved in alternatives throughout 2024, and I will be in 2025 also. And I think there are a lot of fascinating classes. What I find is each of the individual portfolio managers, when they're talking about private equity or talking about infrastructure, talking about transportation or talking about real estate, they all have different niches and different thoughts and different ways that they invest. And it's really rather fascinating watching, okay, this is how we do it and this is how we don't do it. And you can really see the expertise there. So I find that all fascinating. I thought they were all really interesting, but if there's one that sort of stood out to me, and it's not so much because it's the most interesting stuff, maybe it's because it's the most boring stuff, it's infrastructure. Because I think there are real issues on fixed income. I mean, yields are pretty low, and we've got a lot of government debt coming down the pike. Fixed income is supposed to, you know, bonds are supposed to zag when stocks zig, but they're not really doing that in the last few years, and they may not do that going forward as much as they've done. So people need to find another way of getting income into a portfolio. And what I thought was really interesting about infrastructure is talking to the managers, you know, we've been doing this in this space for a long time. If you're in charge of an electric utility, first of all, it takes a lot to turn the lights off. I mean, no matter how badly the economy is doing or whatever market crisis, whatever, people are going to need electricity. They're going to need water. They're going to need basic infrastructure. So demand is pretty steady. It's pretty recession proof. But also, if you're the local supplier in a particular area, the local government, you have to negotiate with them and work with them, they want you to stay in business. So if your costs go up, they will allow you to increase your rates. So you've got a degree of inflation protection. So you've got recession protection and inflation protection. If you've been doing it for a long time, you've figured out how to generate a fair amount of income. And then also, if you do it in a lot of different areas, it's all a matter of working with the regulator and trying to figure out how can we make this work? How can we make it work so we do the investments to grow this space, but to make sure that service continues and customers are happy? So I think having that expertise of working in the space and working with regulators, I think is really interesting. And then finally, I suppose the other thing that I think is fascinating is just the demand for electricity. Mm-hmm. Because electricity has been very stable for a long time. And then suddenly, because of global warming, we've got these spikes in energy consumption over the summer, which is really requiring more electric infrastructure. And we've got the AI revolution, which is requiring a huge amount of power just to power these stations. And we've got a general recognition that for a lot of what we do, you don't want to use fossil fuels. You actually do want to use the electricity that fossil fuels or other things, and perhaps better, other things can provide. And so there's more demand for electricity for things like electric vehicles. So that it's a fascinating area in terms of investment. It's got really interesting investment qualities. And you can get stable income, good stable income, which is protected against inflation, protected against recession. It's not correlated with a 60-40 portfolio. And so you can see this as an asset, how cool it is. But also you can see it as part of the economy. You can see the whole story of the American economy evolve over time in this one asset class. And that's why I think I found infrastructure so fascinating.
I would have picked infrastructure as well. Who knew that one of the most exciting stories of this year was around power and utility companies?
I know.
In public and private markets.
Sounds really boring, really cool. But not boring at all.
No, it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. So that was one of the issues. But of course, the other issue that I think we've heard a lot about this year has been about artificial intelligence. In all our conversations about artificial intelligence, I guess, what has surprised you the most?
So I think one episode you had with Joel Wilson, who's one of our U.S. growth portfolio managers, was really interesting the way that, well, first, he was discussing, you know, the speed and the magnitude of the run-up in some of these AI-related tech companies has been huge. But so has been their profitability, their cash flow. And so just making an important difference there between where we are now with this technology and where we were in the early 2000s or late 90s. Mm-hmm. But then the other aspect that I think is really, really exciting is really about how broad the investment winners are going to be in the space. And it's both those that generate the hardware, the software, and traditional sectors like utilities related to this power hungry data centers. So I think it's just so interesting this year. You've started to see that happen in the markets, this realization that it's not just, you know, you can count on one hand the number of companies that are going to benefit from artificial intelligence. It's really a much broader umbrella of companies. And that's not just in large cap. It's in medium, small-sized companies. It's not just within the tech complex. It can include other sectors like utilities and industrials. I think the last bit that was really interesting is just trying to think about where we are, right? The testing and learning and building infrastructure for large language models. But where are we going to be 5 years from now? Mm-hmm. What kinds of technologies and differences will we have in our day-to-day life and in the economy around autonomous driving or new drug and healthcare discoveries using AI? So I just think this theme's going to be with us for so, so long. We just have to keep thinking of the second, the third, the fourth derivative of the investment team and not get stuck in the very first winners here.
Yeah, one of the ironies of artificial intelligence is people sometimes think, well, I don't need to think because the machine's going to do it for me. And in fact, in our business, nothing requires more thought than the evolution of artificial intelligence because it's got so much potential in so many areas. It's almost like a futurist dream. You sort of look at old episodes of Star Trek to figure out, well, I guess that's what Gene Roddenberry thought about years ago. But really, for something to be successful, it's got to be a technology that's possible that and then is cost effective and then is scalable. And this will really work. And this thing almost works, except nobody's going to pay for it. And as artificial intelligence is fundamentally an evolutionary product, and so watching it evolve and monitoring that evolution and thinking about how it affects our business, affects investments, but also affects the macroeconomy and really society, it's pretty fascinating.
And it's going to be a theme I think we'll do many, many seasons on. For season 11, we did pivot a little bit more to the here and now with the U.S. election. And we recorded a lot of those episodes, actually all of them, before the election itself, going through a number of economic policy items that are relevant for the outlook for the economy and markets. Which one did you think, out of all the topics we touched on, is the most relevant one for investors to keep in mind now that we know the election result?
Well, I think probably the one that's going to make the biggest difference is fiscal policy and the deficit in the end. Because while President-elect Trump talked a lot about toughening immigration standards and raising tariffs, there's only so much you can do without causing a lot of damage to the U.S. economy. And I think ultimately that may not play out. There are going to be a lot of people who will be interested in making sure that we don't destroy the U.S. economy by deporting everybody who could conceivably be deported, or that we don't destroy the economy and cause massive inflation by putting on massive tariffs on all the imported goods. And I think in the end, that will probably limit the impact of some of the tariff changes, some of the immigration changes. But what I think is going to happen over the course of 2025 is there will be a reconciliation bill go through Congress. And we didn't, of course, know before the election that Republicans would actually control the House and the Senate and the White House. But in retrospect, this was something to focus on, is there will be a bill go through. And the problem is, or maybe problem or good thing or bad thing, is there a lot of things that could get added to that? Because there are a lot of promises that were made in the campaign trail, and you can't say, well, I'd love to do this, but Congress won't let me. Or I'd love to do this, but the House won't let me, or the Senate won't let me. But now, in fact, it's all technically possible, except for finding a way of funding it all. And if you say that, you know, we're not going to necessarily fund it all or not fund it all in the next 10 years, it can go through. So I think looking at some of the impact of that on the debt over time, how much more that could grow, what does that mean for long-term interest rate? What does it mean for Fed policy? I think that's ultimately going to turn out to be very important. I think that's the biggest question mark probably over the next few years in terms of the overall direction of the economy.
I thought that was the most interesting episode we did as well. And when we posted it on social media, definitely the one that got the most engagement and the most attention. And it's coming up in so many conversations I have with a lot of clients, a lot of investors, because there's so much nuance there, right? Exactly which taxes will be extended or additional tax cuts? How will that be financed? Yeah. How much room is there to actually cut costs or not? And I think really the action is going to be exactly on the long end of the curve to try to understand how much extra juice investors are going to ask for, knowing that the deficits are going to stay high, the debt is going to rise, and ultimately, you know, how does the 10-year touch 5% or does it go above? It's such an important question.
Well, yeah, it is. And, you know, it's been a very, very good year, obviously, for financial markets, as was 2023. And that leaves asset prices at pretty lofty levels. And I think that investors, you know, 2025 is going to be a year in which we're going to think about risk. We need to think about risk as much as return. And one of the big risks out there is what will a fast rising level of federal debt due to long-term interest rates and therefore due to financial markets in general.
Yeah, and that brings us to our final season of the year, which focuses on our 2025 outlook. Mm-hmm. Out of the cyclical storm and into this policy fog here. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, out of everything that the team worked on and wrote about, what stood out to you as the most interesting opportunity and biggest risk? Is it the fiscal one or was it something else we explored?
Well, I think that in some ways, maybe I'm a little old-fashioned this way, but I do think that valuations matter. And it seems like in recent years, there's been much more focus on momentum. We've gone through a lot of different cycles in the economy. But, you know, when you look at our outlook for 2025, we deliberately named it, you know, out of the cyclical storm and into the policy fog, because we think that the cyclical storm has kind of died down. There are these issues about policy going forward, but it also gives us and markets, I think, a chance to think a little bit about valuations. And so for me, when I look at the dispersion, I mean, we were looking at something this morning about how the dispersion between the 80th percentile and the 20th percentile within the S&P 500 in terms of valuations, that dispersion is higher than it's been 92% of the time over the last 28 years. So we've got this wide dispersion. We've got this concentration in the biggest companies in America. That does suggest that there are some investment opportunities, but also investment risks in valuations. So to me, I would say they're both found in the same place. At sooner or later, we're going to have some disruption. We'll have certainly a big correction in markets. We'll have a bear market. It'll happen. I am an optimist in markets in the long run, in equity markets in the long run, but I recognize that that's going to happen. When it does, valuations will be important. And so when I look at that, I do worry about mega cap growth stocks in the United States. I also worry about sort of fluff like Bitcoin and meme stocks and so forth. But I also see some reason for optimism in U.S. value stocks, maybe in some U.S. small caps, and international stocks in general, which are all relatively cheap. And I think it's important for people to think about those valuations, because I often say, you know, I think sometimes we misunderstand in this business what people are really looking for. Most people are not looking for the best return in the neighborhood. They just don't want to have the worst return in the neighborhood and have to move out of the neighborhood. And so I think people do naturally want to make sure that they preserve their money and grow their money, but preserve it also. And I think that's why we have to look at both things that are overvalued and undervalued in markets today. And that's, to me, I think that's where both the opportunity and risk is.
And I thought the last section of our outlook where we talked about investment implications, the the biggest risk and opportunity there that came out was exactly that, just taking the time to make sure that the foundation of the house is even, that it's solid, because ultimately it was very unbalanced returns over the last 2 years, and that perhaps portfolios have gotten pretty lopsided and out of whack there.
Well, that's right. And I think what you know, part of it obviously is, I mentioned, sort of public markets, but there are other ways of adding to the strength of foundations, which is putting in some alternatives there. Again, you can find non-correlated areas of return, ways of getting extra income into a portfolio, ways of, you know, finding other areas of stability for a portfolio. This is, you know, once you go down the sort of looking at valuation route, once you realize that there's probably too much concentration in U.S. indices, it does speak to the need for a broader diversification in 2025. And I think a lot of our focus this year will be helping people achieve that broader diversification, which will hopefully give them good long-term returns, but also particularly protect them from risk if something goes wrong with the most favored area of global markets in the last few years.
That's right.
Thank you very much, Gabby, and I look forward to working with you on this in 2025.
I look forward to it. Thank you, David.
Well, thank you for joining us today for our 2024 Wrapped. This episode marks the end of Season 12 of Insights Now, but don't worry, we'll be back shortly. With a new administration entering the White House, valuations across markets elevated, and the outlook for policy still largely uncertain, 2025 should be an exciting year with plenty to discuss. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today. Happy holidays, and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only, based on assumptions and current market conditions, and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.